It's WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss. Certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlanta's Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future. Brought to you every Sunday by RBM of Atlanta Mercedes-Benz, Sandy Springs.
Good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. I'm your host, Wes Moss, here every Sunday morning to take your calls and your questions. It's 7 minutes past the hour, and it's time for Money Matters. The number here in the studio, 404-872-0750. The Dow's at 20,000. The market for the week up 1.3% on the Dow to get us there. 1% on the S&P 500. The cover of Barron says, next stop, Dow 30,000. You do the math on that, they say 2025, it gets us. All we need is how much of a percentage rate of return over the next 9 years to get from 20 to 30? Maybe not as much as you think. The answer mathematically is only 4.6%. So it doesn't sound like a whole lot, does it? 4.608, 2% per year. It gets us from 20 to 30 in 2025. Doesn't seem nearly as difficult when you break it down in that context. Today, the theme has been yield at cost. The power of dividends, if you look at it over time, and I have a new rule of thumb that we're going to talk about here in just a little bit, but we need to get back to the phones here. So if you have questions about, hey, maybe you're 42 years old and you're wondering what your allocation inside the 401k looks like in this world we live in, record uncertainty politically, a record stock market, those two interface, they collide, it makes it for difficult decision-making, makes difficult decision-making on your portfolio if you're even remotely nervous about the market. If you're not, then you don't care about the ups and downs, and you're totally fine with all that. From my experience, when you're 68 or 58, you start to get a little more nervous about the fluctuation of the Dow Jones and the S&P 500. If you look back over a long-term chart, hey, you can handle the 10s and the 15% corrections, but if it looks like a 50% or wait a minute, I don't want to be there for that. How do we avoid that? Answer really is about allocation, not timing, which gets us to our rule of thumb that we'll talk about here later in the show here that's meant to replace and repeal something called own your age in bonds. I've got a new rule of thumb for you. So if you have questions about ETFs or bond funds or stock funds or bond ladders or annuities, anything that touches this tangentially and it relates back to your family and planning for the future, whether it's education or if it's you and your spouse. Hey, honey, what should we be doing here? Should we take a left or a right? Well, I don't know. Let's call Wes over on Money Matters at WSB. We're in the car. We have nothing else to do. We might as well do that. Hey, what's the number? Oh, get out your smartphone. Well, the number is 404-872-0750. Again, we'll go to the phones here in a minute, but if you have questions, give me a call here in the studio. The number 404-872-0750 or 1-800-WSB-TALK. Let's go to the phones here. Let's start with a gentleman named Jeff who joins us from Atlanta. Jeff, what's up? We're back to you, and I wanted to give it. We only had about a minute right at the end of the last show, and your story really is about making it through a difficult period of time in the economy like we all went through, but you were in a particularly cyclical business. And as a builder, you got burned like almost every single builder on the planet because real estate dropped by 30-40%. And it was and banks got really tight on credit and it was just tough. But you made it through. And you also have a bunch of kids, it sounds like, have gone to school. Tell me about the kids real quick. And where are you in this new planning phase of life?
Well, I have four kids, four children, adults now. My youngest daughter's a senior at UGA. She's about to graduate. And I have three sons that are 28, 30, and 34, all out of the house, couple married with kids. So we're in that phase of life with grandchildren. And, you know, there's that revolving door thing going on from time to time. They need to come back home. And that's exactly what's happened. We got one of our sons at home right now trying to figure out what he's going to do with that MBA and, you know, get on in life. He's come to work in my construction company, but my wife and I opened an antique shop to try to survive the crash period, and I refinished furniture. And while it was a labor of love and a lot of great things learned, it just didn't meet our obligations. So
it just there's not a huge amount of profit in refurbishing furniture.
Yeah, it's more of a labor of love. Honestly, you just can't get your money back out of it. But it was an opportunity and a time to do a lateral move. And unfortunately, my wife's parents had become ill, and we were unable to keep it going. So,
what kind of build? So Jeff, let me ask you this: what kind of how many more years do you think you have in you to be a builder? I think you said commercial building and restoration.
Right, I do. Yeah, I do a lot of commercial construction, hotel work, a lot of work downtown Atlanta.
How many years left do you have in you?
You know, it's interesting. I'm unsure about that, but I feel as though, at 58, probably 65 is what I'm aiming for, and I've got a couple of, maybe all of my boys and my daughter possibly interested in coming into the business. So we'll see where that goes. But, yeah, probably about 5 to 7 years is what I'm thinking.
Wow. Okay. And I do believe, especially in Atlanta, with demographics and companies moving here, and the population growth we have here, I don't see you having difficulty over the next several years. So you're kind of in your making. This is your harvest time because you've got the kids out. Your obligations, I guess, are probably lower than they've been. And now you can really ramp up earnings and, I guess, savings really probably at this point. So are you guys planning on saving a bunch over the next 5 to 7 years as well?
We are, and we've been perfectly content to sit on that cash. And, my parents tucking it under the mattress makes a whole lot more sense to me now after what we went through in 08. So I'm a little bit fearful of taking any risks with it, but I hate to see it sitting there not doing anything for us. So. We've aggressively gone after the U.S. growth funds over the years with our SEP IRAs, and I was fortunate enough to give each one of my children, a SEP IRA, or a Roth IRA.
Well, I guess this, but if we go back to this, Jeff, you do have, and the reason I think this is important is that when you're saving and you're adding to the pie, it makes, I think, it makes it easier to get invested. So if you notice, or I've noticed this over many years, when people are contributing to their 401k, if they're putting a bunch in every year over and over and over again, it's a little easier to stomach these ups and downs because you're adding. And even if the market or your allocation takes a little bit of a hit, you're still putting money in. And when you do that, you're actually buying lower and you're effectively dollar cost averaging if things don't go well. So you can kind of look on the bright side that over the next couple of years, if you're really going to be saving over the next 7 full years, you're putting money away. The reality here is that you'd rather have some dips in the market. You'd rather have some pullbacks or corrections because if you're going to systematically be putting money in, it actually makes for a better long-term result if you get some pullbacks and you're putting money in and then you're not using the money for another 10 years from now. It can help help your mindset a little bit and say, well, okay, I know I don't want to be all stocks. I've got this cash sitting here. It's difficult to get it into the market because we're at a Dow 20,000. But maybe you have maybe what might work for you would be a balanced allocation where you might only have 40 or 50% in the blue chip stock side of the world. The other 60% is in bonds that are pretty conservative and they're not going to go down when the stock market goes down. And maybe that's the kind of allocation that you can live with, Jeff. And then knowing what makes it even more palatable for you guys is that as markets do correct, and then let's say 6 months from now or 18 months from now or 36 months from now, we finally get a bigger correction. Well, you know that you guys are, the business is solid. It's in a good growth phase and you're saving a bunch of money and you're just going to systematically keep adding. And I think that's one way to get through or almost stomach the oscillations we have in the stock market, Jeff. But you also have to kind of build that into your plan where you say, okay, I'm comfortable with this mix. We're going to put half of the assets that have just been sitting in cash doing nothing. We're going to get half of that to work in a balanced way today. And we are going to systematically continue to get into this market or add to our investments over the next year. And historically, you're better off actually just going ahead and doing it now because dollar cost averaging typically actually costs us money, but it might be worth it just for our own psyche, knowing that we're not diving headfirst with all of the cash fully invested. And I think that's your answer here, is that to say, look, you and your wife talking, you say, hey, let's do half of these investments now. And when I'm investing it, I'm going to do it in a balanced fashion. I'm not just diving headfirst into the S&P 500. I'm putting it in both dividend paying stocks, and I'm looking at bonds, and I'm looking at some of these other hybrid areas that are kind of in between stocks and bonds. And I think that may give you the confidence that you need moving forward, because you've got to be confident in your plan. And a balanced investment can do that. So it could be as simple as using something like a Vanguard target date fund. It might be the Vanguard Target 2020 fund right now, which is inherently set up with a stock bond balance to begin with. Or the Vanguard Balanced Fund, which has about a little more than half in stocks and the other a little less than half in bonds. And that is the kind of investment that can get you off go. And that's what you need. And a strategy or a roadmap over the next 5 to 7 years, you've got the time, you've got the income, you've got the power to save. And yes, it's hard to get going, but this is a good time to do it. So all that to say, the only way you can move forward here, Jeff, is to have a systematic plan in place, and it'll get you through what is a pretty difficult question to answer, but I think hopefully that's helpful. Of course, you can find me and the team. Go to wesmoss.com if you want to talk about it further, Jeff. Go to my website, wesmoss.com, WESMOSS.com. Contact page, upper right-hand corner. Those emails come straight to me. And if you want to continue further or talk about something beyond that, I'm happy to do so. I'll reach back out to you, shoot you an email, and we'll get together. You're listening to Money Matters. More calls and questions and a new rule of thumb for Money Matters, all coming up straight ahead right here on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB.
Now, here's more great money and investment advice from certified financial planner Wes Moss.
Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. Today, cloudy with a slight chance of rain. High 53, winds 15 to 25 miles an hour. Wow. Lows tonight around 32. Monday, sunny with a high of 51, low of 38. Brought to you by Shoemate. Good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. To the phones, we go right to Chris, who joins us from Cumming. Chris, good morning. How can I help? Oh, there goes Chris. He's gone. Good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. The number here, 404. Hey, Chris, if you want to call back, 404-872-0750. Kim joins us in Decatur. Kim, good morning. Welcome to the show. How can we help?
Well, you've been talking about dividends, and I'm interested in either a Vanguard fund that's a dividend-paying fund or an ETF, because I've heard you mention an ETF. I know, but I can't remember what the letters are for it.
Oh, let me go. Okay, it sounds like you've got a kennel in the back. Are those your dogs?
I'm at Home Depot.
Oh, Home Depot, even better. Okay, well, it sounds like there's a howler monkey in the background there. I don't even, you're like in a rainforest jungle. All right, Kim, here's the deal. There are a couple different dividend ETFs that we do talk about. One of them is the Vanguard Dividend Appreciation ETF. You can buy it in a fund or an exchange-traded fund, so a mutual fund or an exchange-traded fund. The symbol on that is VIG, Victor Indigo. Let's go get them, VIG. And that is a starter point for a dividend grower strategy. SDY is another ETF that is a dividend-oriented strategy we've talked about for many years. DVY is another version of that. So there are a lot of different ETFs to choose from. Some of those ETFs are ETF only, and some of them, like in the case of Vanguard, they've got a mutual fund and an ETF that are virtually the same. So there's plenty of options for all of us when we're looking for this. We're going to continue to go to the phones, and when we get back, the number again, 404-872-0750. We still have a new rule of thumb for Money Matters coming up straight ahead, so stay with us right here on News 95.5 AM 750 WSB.
It's WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss, certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlantis Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future. Brought to you every Sunday by RBM of Atlanta, Mercedes-Benz, Sandy Springs.
Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters here on a Sunday morning. Today, cloudy. Chance of rain. Slight chance of rain. High 53. Winds windy. 15 to 25 miles an hour. Lows tonight around 32. Monday, sunny with a high of 51. Low of 38. Weather brought to you by Shoemate. So good morning. Let's go to the phones here. We still have a Money Matters rule of thumb we need to get to that I'm excited about. It's not every day that we come up with a new rule of thumb. It's like every 10 years we do that. So we'll go to the phones and then we'll get to this. The number in the studio, I love answering your calls and questions. It's the fun part about Money Matters. It's the spontaneous part about it. We don't plan for it. We can't plan for it. We have no idea who's listening. No idea who's out there thinking about money and no idea what your questions will be when it comes to money and family finance and trying to plan for you and your kids and the future of the world. So that's what we like to do here. So give us a call here in the studio. The number 404-872-0750. Again, 404-872-0750 or 1-800. WSB Talk. We'll go to Jeff, who joins us from Decatur. Jeff, good morning. Welcome to the show. What's going on? How can we help?
Good morning. My question is about spending for college. I've got two in college. We're burning through their 529s. And
burning through.
Yeah, burning through.
So it's like Sherman's coming through Atlanta. And that's my
clip.
Yeah. Where are they going to school, by the way?
They're both in state. One's at UGA and one's at Tech.
And what are you, so do they have hope? Or are you doing full boat? And what is full boat right now?
They have hope.
But it's still costing you about how much?
About, between the two of them, about 30 a year.
Wow, that's still a lot. That's still a lot.
I think a lot of people who haven't gotten to this point overestimate the hope. But we appreciate it.
Yeah, no, it is wonderful, but it's still, it doesn't mean that college isn't still a gigantic undertaking. So,
exactly.
Okay, so how many years left with everybody in school? How many college years remaining?
Six. They're both in their first year.
Mm-hmm. So you have another, 6 years times 30, let's call it almost 100 grand. No, I'm sorry, almost $200,000. Wow, that is a lot of money. That on the surface is 180, but 30 times, that's a lot. So you've got a long way to go here. And so I guess the question, so you have a question because you have some saved in 529s. How much is that?
The way I see it, our 529s will get us through next year, and then that will leave, and maybe a little more, so then that will leave roughly two more years per student, per child.
So really you've got 4 years to pay for, Jeff.
Correct.
Okay. So you've got 120 grand left beyond the 520. Are you using the Georgia plan, the path to college?
Actually, no. It's the Massachusetts plan, and I signed up for it so long ago, I honestly can't remember why I chose that plan.
All right. Well, at least you're glad you have it. And
absolutely.
I guess to some extent, it looks like you guys are, I go back to this multi-share idea on how we really pay for big expenses like this. And most families in America don't just pay for this out of pocket. I don't know if I've told the story on radio, but one of my good friends, he's one of four boys. All four of them went to Ivy League schools. And the dad paid for all four. So think about 16 years worth of Ivy League, Harvard, Princeton educations. I mean, it cost him $1 million or more. And he just paid for it out of cash flow. But he was also a famous doctor in Florida that made $1.5 million a year, and he could do it. That's pretty rare, right? So that doesn't happen. What happens in the real world for most people is you figure out a way to share the burden of the cost, and it typically goes something like this. We save a third, and Jeff, it sounds like you've done that. It sounds like you've really saved what will ultimately have paid for about a third of this whole education. You end up, and this is why we don't retire until our kids are through college, for the most part, again, in the real world. You typically are working while they're in school, and you're paying for a third of it, and then a third usually gets comes in the form of a loan. So do you, are you okay with them taking out some debt, or are you having a little bit of debt, or would you like it so that they come out of college totally debt free?
I am okay with them taking on some, you know, obviously the less the better, but I'm not adverse to them sharing the burden.
Okay. And right now they don't have any debt right now at all. And you guys have no loans out.
Correct.
Yeah. See, I think it's important for them to have some real skin in the game on this. And I know you don't want to, it's so hard when kids get out of school, even if they're educated, it's still hard to get a job. And when they do get jobs, wages are low for new employees. I mean, it's a tough environment to get out there and get financially independent. And I understand that. I think about my own kids at some point, you know, what are they going to do? Right. But at the same time, having a little bit of skin in the game where they've got a student loan payment, and maybe it's $200 or $300 a month, it's going to be a lot for them in their first job, but it really is important for them to have that skin in the game. And even if I get to the point, and my kids are still really young, I've got a 9-year-old at the oldest, Jeff, and then my youngest of four is not even turned one yet. So I got a long way to go. And even if I fast forward 9 years and another 15 years, I want them to share in the cost. Even if I have the ability, if I fast forward and I can pay for it, no problem, I want them to share in it. So I think just as tactically as a parent, it's a great idea to have them have a little bit of that student loan debt. And you're going to keep, I mean, how old are you, Jeff?
50.
So you've got, I mean, you're probably working for another more than 10 years anyway, right?
Whether I want to or not, yes.
So I think the answer here is that you through cash flow, you pay for a third of this, you've got the 529s, and then the balance then goes to them in a student loan. And I think that's a really appropriate way to balance that. It's smart financially, and then it's smart from kind of that life lesson perspective of them having some skin in the game.
So for that cash flow, would you recommend backing off, diminishing, or stopping our retirement funding? So to come up with the extra cash, would you say to stop contributing to our 401k and Roth IRA when the 529s run out, and then that would there would be some more money there?
I'm okay to have it reduced but not stop. So I would have, if your 401k match is still 5%, and I presume there's some matching with your 401k, Jeff?
Yes.
Don't go below that. If you're doing 15 and they match 5, yes, you could potentially reduce it for the two-year period that you've got to get through while you have your college costs the highest. I wouldn't go to zero in the 401k. I would just go down to at least getting your match. But you could back off for just a little bit. Remember, you're already 50, so you've gotten a little bit of momentum here. And then as soon as they're done, you go back into your harvest period of time, which is that last 10 years plus of you working. A caller earlier, we talked about the same thing, is that they're getting into their harvest years. And the harvest years are just your highest earning and kids are gone, and you can make up for a lot of time in that last decade worth of savings. So for you in the next 2 or 3 years to back down a little bit on the 401k and just go down to what let's say you only save what they're matching, I think that's fine. So yes. So that's what I'm saying here, is that don't feel bad to back down a little bit on the 401k, because your big saving years are just ahead. As soon as these kids are done paying for school and they get their loans, then you start to really sock it away. So that's my 2 cents on college, Jeff. And this is an important conversation for all parents to really think about. Jeff, thanks for your call, man, and have a great rest of your Sunday.
Thanks for your time.
404-872-0750. Actually, I think we've got to go to prize pack. We've got rule of thumb, brand new Money Matters rule of thumb. So Ryan, do you want to wait on the prize pack, or do we want to do it right now? I guess this is it's a right now signal. Air traffic control says, let's do it.
Let's do it. The McDonald's weekend prize pack is a 4-pack of tickets to Clark Howard Night at the Atlanta Gladiators game on February 4th at the Infinite Energy Arena, and a family 4-pack of tickets to Snow Mountain now through February 26th at Stone Mountain Park. This week's trivia, prize pack actually just goes to caller number 11. My lucky number 11.
All right. So we're good to go. And the prize line, by the way, 404-741-0750 and 404-741-0750. All right. So we took a call last week that prompted a lot of thought that I've had over the last, since last Sunday. And it went back to, hey, Wes, I'm 70. Shouldn't I own my age in bonds? And I've gotten that question a lot lately. I think it's because of the nervousness of the election and we've got a new White House and there's a lot swirling in the world of investing, and I think nerves are heightened right now. And we go back to, well, this is kind of a protective mechanism, own your age in bonds. Well, that's a rule of thumb that has worked for a long time. And I love these rules of thumb. I mean, most of the time, they're kind of like a North Star for just keeping you on course. I don't know what those other rules of thumb are in the world, but they're usually pretty good. Like 8 hours of sleep, that's a good rule of thumb. Pay yourself first. Hey, that's a good rule of thumb. The percentage of stocks should be 100% minus your age, or own your age in bonds. Those are good rules of thumb over time. Taxes, TSL, taxes, savings, life. Save, taxes are 30, savings is 20, life is 50 of your gross income. Hey, good rule of thumb. How much house can you afford? I like that rule of thumb. Your mortgage balance should be 2x or 2x your annual salary or less. Good rule of thumb, right? But one that keeps coming up is this whole own your age in bonds thing. And I'm, like I just talked about here, 70 years old, 70% bonds, 60 years old, nearing retirement, 60% bonds, right? It's still not the worst guide in the world. But at some point, I think it stops making sense, especially with this dramatic shift that we're seeing in the bond market. Remember that interest rates, as they go down, bonds go up. And that was a 30-year trend that worked. That trend started to reverse, though, 6 months ago. So we could be in for 20 or 30 years that's the inverse of what we've seen. And the whole 8% a year average rate of return for bonds since 1976, that's not going to happen over the next 40 years. And yes, you heard me correctly. The average rate of return for the aggregate bond index since 1976 is 8.12% for the average annual return for the aggregate bond index, for goodness sakes. So let's be careful with own your age in bonds. Let's replace it. Let's no longer invest with your age in mind. Let's invest with your horizon in mind. And if you're an investor with an even average tolerance for volatility and fluctuation, which is another rule of thumb, you think you have at least 15 years or more left on this planet, here's a new rule of thumb for you. At least 50% in stocks. Now, the kind of stocks can depend, and I'm partial to dividend payers. We talked about that today. Growth can also work as well. But think about what this rule of thumb is saying. 15 years or more, 50% in stocks. 15 years or more on this planet left, 50% in stocks. We're going to call it the 15-50 horizon rule. More about that right here on Money Matters. So stay tuned, straight ahead.
Now back to Wes Moss of the money and investing advice you need.
According to Ryan Ely here in the studio with me, Jonathan from Hushton, Georgia, won the weekend prize pack. Ryan Ely, air traffic control here, producer, Money Matters. Good morning. And I want to wrap up today, but I want to get to this new rule of thumb. Remember what we're saying in this new rule of thumb is that if you got 15 years or more, you should have probably at least 50% in stocks. And this is for anyone with a moderate risk tolerance or greater. So unless you're dying tomorrow, most of you that are asking yourself that question will say, yeah, I've got 15 years, Wes. At 60, you would say that. At 70, at 80, even if you're 90, you still probably say, yeah, I might have 15 years or more. So it's a little bit of a trick question, because no matter what age you are, this rule of thumb says you should probably have at least 50% in stock. So it's a little bit of a trick question rule of thumb, but it makes a lot of sense. Remember, it reminds me of that, the approach. This is kind of a simple way to approach what's a very complex and convoluted process. By the way, the formula was good enough for Benjamin Graham. He lived from 1904 to 76. economics investment pro. Remember, he's the father of value investing, professor at Columbia Business School. He was Warren Buffett's mentor, author of The Intelligent Investor. Buffett says that's the best book about investing ever written. And Graham has this formula of 50% in stocks, 50% bonds. You rebalance every time that gets out of whack. So you are effectively buying low and selling high as you rebalance. And that was good enough for him. So maybe it's good enough for all of us. So let's replace Own Your Age in Bonds with something new. We're calling it the 1550, 1550 horizon rule. You got 15 years left on this planet, 50% in stocks. It's a good rule of thumb. If you have 15 years or more, you should have at least 50% in stocks. And that makes sense. The other 50% can be cash and bonds and things that don't or are not at the mercy of the stock market. The 1550 horizon rule. I like that. Ryan wasn't as big of a fan, but it's new and I'm excited to have a new rule of thumb. We'll talk more about it in future Money Matters. You can find me online, wesmoss.com, WESMOSS.com, under the tools section. There are all about happy retirees, retirement calculators. There's even a workbook, The 5 Money Secrets of the Happiest Retirees. Contact button, upper right-hand corner. Those emails come straight to me. They come to Ryan. We'll get back to you. Enjoy the rest of this beautiful Sunday.